Welcome to Skull Island. It's another edition of the Film Threat Podcast. The show. I am Chris Gore, the publisher editor of filmthreat.com, joined by Anthony Ray Bench, our lead film critic.
How's it going, everybody?
We got a lot of movies to talk about, so we're going to dive right in. But before we do that, I should let you know that at location wise, we are actually at the Arclight Cinema on Sunset Boulevard in Los Angeles, California. We're waiting to see a screening of Kong. We're gonna see King Kong.
Kong Skull Island.
Kong Skull Island. So we're in the bar area at the Arclight in Hollywood, and this is where a lot of people come to see. I mean, I saw Force Awakens here. I've seen so many screenings of movies. Like, this is a fun place to come, where I meet a whole bunch of friends, and we'll go to see a movie on opening night. And by opening night, I mean the first screening on a Thursday, which is usually like 7 or 8 p.m. I also have to apologize. I am still sick. I have this horrible sickness that I've had since the Film Threat party. Actually, I've been sick on and off, but I feel like I you can hear it in my voice. Maybe you can hear it in my voice. I don't know, but I have been ill. We should have done another podcast last week, but you know, we did that Oscar post show. But boy, I was down for the count. I'm finally going to the doctor. Exciting stuff.
Riveting podcast.
Yeah, exactly. Riveting podcast. Gore is sick. Oh, God. Anyways, so if you hear some little noise in the background, hey, we're in a public place. We're in the bar area of the Arclight in Hollywood. And this is one of my favorite theaters. The only thing I don't like about this theater, the price of the drinks.
It's very expensive.
The price of the drinks, and sometimes the service is not so great. I'm going to be honest with you, Arclight Cinemas. The service is not so great. You have competition. You got iPick. You've got other Arclight Cinemas. I actually go to the Arclight in Pasadena, which is like blocks from where I live. But that's my... Arclight of choice, but this is the one that all my friends that are centrally located in LA, they say, come on, let's go see a movie. One of my favorites I saw here, they did a retrospective screening of Logan's Run.
Oh, wow.
And Michael York was here.
That's awesome.
Now, that's a movie that needs to be remade because it just, I mean, I watched it the other week. There's like this sort of in rotation movies that I watch too many times just to keep on in the background, like sort of my own personal screensaver.
Yeah.
Logan's Run is one of those movies, and boy, it does not hold up.
No.
Like, from an effect standpoint, it is so behind.
But the premise is so great.
The premise is so great, and, like, it has a lot of chemistry. Michael York was at the screening, and he did a whole thing where he... excuse me. There's the sick. He talked about, like, getting the script for the film, and it really was about the chemistry of the leads, you know, Jenny Ogeter and Michael York. And I'm sure this will not be the last time that the film Logan's Run comes up on this podcast. So, but we've got a lot of films to talk about. Let's launch right in. This is a movie from last year, but I think it deserves, we should be talking about it, A Monster Calls. So Anthony, you saw this film. I did not see it. In fact, you just recently returned the screener to me. So now I'll finally get to see it. But what did you think?
I loved it.
Your review's on the website, filmthreat.com.
It's one of those movies, it's a children's movie, but it deals with kind of darker subject. It's a movie about coping with death. And the lead...
It could be a great double feature with Kubo and the Two Strings.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Oh, for real? Yeah. I was just joking.
No, it seriously is. It does feel like a Laika film, but a live action. And are a lot of sequences that are animated.
The trailer's spectacular.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The trailer really is spectacular.
Yeah. There's a lot of animated sequences that are just breathtaking. They're done in a watercolor style. And the premise of it is basically this child named Connor is... his mother is dying of terminal cancer. And he is visited by this monster that looks like a tree. A lot of people have criticized the movie because it looks like Groot. There have been other tree monsters. It's not a ripoff.
Wizard of Oz.
Yeah. Treebeard from
Treebeard.
Lord of the Rings.
Lord of the Rings. How about in H.R. Puffin stuff?
Yep.
There have been tree creatures throughout pop culture and film and television.
It's nothing new, and I believe the book came out before Guardians of the Galaxy. And let's be fair, nobody knew who Groot was before Guardians of the Galaxy came out.
Although it's interesting, I just saw that Groot was actually in an... It was an issue of, I believe it was Journey into Mystery.
Mm-hmm.
And actually even predates the Fantastic Four. Groot was created as like a monster. And then they just sort of... Marvel was constantly creating things and then they would steal ideas from themselves.
Yeah.
Not in a bad way, just sort of like, ah, we created this character in this issue, just have that same character do this.
Oh, we can agree that Groot was kind of obscure though. So, I mean, aesthetically, the Groot wasn't a ripoff, or the monster in this movie wasn't a ripoff of Groot.
Okay, so no, wait a second, because I read your review. Did this movie make you cry?
Yes.
Okay, but I mean, also, there's some personal circumstances that, you know.
My girlfriend, her grandmother died of cancer last summer, and it was a...
I'm sorry to hear that, man.
It was a very hard thing to watch her go through and watch her family to go through, because she was a very strong, independent woman, and just to see her, you know, not be able to go out and work in her garden and, you know, have to have people take care of her. It was just hard to see her go. And there's this scene in the movie where the monster kind of corners the Connor character and basically says, I want you to tell me the truth. I want you to tell me what you're feeling. I want you to, you know, tell me what's in your heart. And the boy breaks down and he's like, you know, I'm not going to tell you. I don't want to say it. And the monster says, you're going to tell me, otherwise you're going to die here. It's going to kill you. And the boy says, you know, I want this to be over. I just want her to die. And the monster says, you know, there. And the boy says, you know, like, I feel like a terrible person. And he says, no, this is human. Like, you are in pain. And it's a very human thing not to want to be in pain. And that's when I lost it, because it's something my girlfriend said. She was like, I just want this to be over. I'm tired of watching my grandma suffer.
It's a really touching story, but you know what though? You didn't say spoiler alert before you told the story.
I'm sorry. I'll add it.
But the one thing is, who doesn't love grandmothers? A grandmother. Yeah. I mean, like, I don't have grandparents now. Mine have all passed away. But boy, I love my grandparents more than anything. They were the greatest. Ted and Stella, my grandfather and grandmother, like, they were the coolest people that I'd ever known. Like, I mean, they're awesome. They're my heroes. You know, they were married for over 50 years. Grandfather was in the Navy in World War II. My grandmother was just this, again, like a strong, independent woman. And it was really difficult to see them when my grandparents got older, just become less and less physically capable.
Mm-hmm.
That was just really disheartening. It was really difficult to watch.
And I think in kind of this world where we have movies like Trolls and even Moana to a certain extent, where serious subjects aren't being touched upon, like it's kind of being shied away from in children's movies.
I like that. I like that when a movie like Kubo was my favorite animated movie of last year.
Mine too.
I thought it was brilliant. But that deals with acceptance of death.
Yeah.
That's what that film deals with. So when you see movies that tackle those topics in a delightful children's film, I think it's, you know, I think it's really brave to deal with that, because kids will have to deal with that at some point.
Yeah.
A grandmother, a relative, someone is going to pass away. A pet.
Yeah.
You know, they're going to lose someone. Mm-hmm. So how to deal with and grapple with those issues is really important.
Yeah, I would say it's about on equal footing, like with Kubo, where, you know...
See, now I want to see the movie.
Yeah.
Thank you for returning the screener after all of this time.
You're welcome. another thing I want to say about the movie is that it is just visually gorgeous and terrifying. The monster is terrifying. But I think that shouldn't be a deterrent. Like, children should be scared. That's something even Walt Disney agreed with. If you watch earlier...
I agree with you. Yeah. I think children like to be scared, and they like to giggle at juvenile humor.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, no, it's fun to be scared. I mean, there's something about it that's kind of fun. I think it gets back to a primal thing, because I remember playing with my kids when they were younger, and one of the things that was a simple, fun game was, I'm going to get you.
Mm-hmm.
And you chase them. I remember chasing my kids round and round the couch.
Yeah.
Round and round the couch. It was, I mean, it was good exercise, but it was also like a good, like, just to, like, I'd never catch them, but like, it was like, I'm going to, that whole, like, I'm going to scream and be scared while I'm, I mean, that to me is primal. That's why, like, so many horror movies are based on that simple concept.
Yeah.
Because it's still in our heads, still in our adult heads from childhood.
Yeah. And I mean, with my stepbrother, I would, you know, hide around the corner and pop out and, you know? That was one of my favorite things.
Cheap scares, but they're always fun. Okay,
yeah.
Let's talk about another movie that we both saw,
sure.
Which I got fantastic reviews. Although its perfect score on Rotten Tomatoes was ruined partially by you and someone else, Get Out.
I ruined it?
You did ruin it, because you gave it, I think, 8 out of 10.
Oh.
Because it had 100% previous to your review.
Sorry.
Okay, so we both saw it at an early screening.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
If you wrote the review, would you have given it a perfect score?
No, I would not have.
Okay.
I would not have. But I mean, look, the theme is really relevant to today.
Absolutely.
Right? It's like,
yeah.
I think that just like, I love when a horror film or a genre movie grapples with a social issue.
Yeah.
I think whether it's a Twilight Zone or, you know, like Twilight Zone used to deal with social issues, Black Mirror currently is sort of a modern day version of Twilight Zone, and I like when genre movies deal with social issues.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I think that's what they're supposed to be used for. I mean, the original Star Trek, not every episode, but most of them dealt with morality issues,
absolutely,
social issues, racism, mm-hmm. sexism, politics. I like that when genre deals with something, but is not preaching. And Get Out does it well. Why don't you, because you actually reviewed it for the website, why don't you give us the synopsis? There's a character named Chris.
Yes. Chris is a photographer, and he's dating a white woman. I believe her name was Rose, right?
It was the chick from Girls that got her ass eaten out. That's all I remember. Brian Williams' daughter.
Yeah, yeah.
She's like the basic bitch on Girls, which I still currently hate watch.
Yeah.
I binge watched the latest four episodes of Girls. I still fucking hate that show.
I'm over it.
And I watch every episode of that show.
I'm over it.
To me, I almost feel like just saying to the cast, this is why non-whites hate whites, is shows like Girls. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, like, look, they're just entitled fucking
vapid
white girls.
Yeah.
It's annoying. They should just retitle the show White Girls. But it's the chick from Girls that's the hot one, who's Brian Williams' daughter, who got her ass eaten out. I don't remember the actress's name.
Yeah.
She's in the movie, and then it's the dude, the black dude, who was in the second or third episode of Black Mirror, mm-hmm. which was the video game one.
Yeah.
Which was, I forget the name of that episode, but it's one of the better Black Mirror episodes, where he's getting the points, and then they get on that singing show.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. He's awesome in it, too, by the way. So okay, so, get to the story.
They're an interracial couple, and she wants him to
Have you ever been in an interracial relationship?
I have not. I've dated a Latina.
All right. My girlfriend in college was African American.
Mm-hmm. I remember you mentioning that on like an episode of Podcrash or something.
Yeah, yeah. Now, it's not like I, you know, look, if it comes up, it comes up. But yeah, so she was great. She was awesome. I didn't like her because of her race. I just liked her because we were both into Batman. We were both into comic books. She was nerdy. She was into fashion. I was into fashion. It's cool. We're friends on Facebook.
So she wants Chris to meet her parents, and they're living in, like, the boonies. And it's just a weird vibe from the get-go. She doesn't tell him that her parents don't know.
Here's what's weird that I identified with, because I grew up pretty dirt poor in Detroit.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't realize I grew up poor because I was loved, you know what I mean? Like, it didn't matter.
Yeah.
Like, I felt like I had these loving grandparents, I had loving aunts, I had a loving single mom who raised me, and I didn't know that, like, I just sort of had, like, you know, here's my clothes, which weren't very many. Here's why we didn't, my mom was not showering me with stuff and just barely getting by. But I was loved. I didn't feel like, but like I identified with the character Chris in this movie, because when they go to these rich white people's house, it's, I still feel uncomfortable around the sort of, you know, bourgeois rich white folks. I get a little like, this is not my scene.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So he's really uncomfortable.
Super uncomfortable, because it's like,
it's this weird sort of subtle racism, right?
Yeah, yeah. They're trying to overcompensate. They're almost being too welcoming.
Exactly, which is always creepy.
Yeah, it's super unnatural. The father character is talking about Obama. He uses...
I'd have voted for him a third time.
Yeah, yeah. He talks about...
It's what's his name? Bradley... Bradley Whitmore or Whit whatever. He was on The West Wing.
Yeah. You know, like there's a line about, you know, they hit a deer at one point, and the father character is talking about, you know, oh, deers are no good. Like, you know, you killed one. Like, that's the start. Like, just all this, like, super, like, you're almost thinking,
it's
like,
a little
is
creepy.
That, yeah,
it's creepy.
Is that racist? Am I racist for thinking that that's racist? Like, that's where the movie is brilliant, in my opinion. Like, there's so much stuff that sounds racist, and it makes you question yourself. Another thing that I really liked about this movie is, even from the trailers, you kind of get this idea in your head of where it's going to go. Like, I saw the trailer, and I was just like, all right, obviously, you know, they're somehow brainwashing black people into being kind of slaves. Like, that's what's...
Again?
Yeah, yeah, like, that's what it's going to be. It's like the Stepford Wives, but for black people. Like,
well, don't tell what the twist is.
That's not the twist.
Exactly, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But I can tell you're leading up to maybe telling the twist.
I'm not going to tell
There's
the
a twist.
Twist,
like, middle of the movie, you figure out, like, what they're doing.
That, but to be honest, that's all I want to say about the film. It's great.
I'm sorry, if you hear someone coughing in the background, it's me.
Yeah.
And I'll be pointing the mic the other direction, so you don't have to hear my grossness.
Two things I want to say about the movie, though, is it was way too heavy on jump scares. I thought that was a bit ridiculous.
Didn't bother me.
Well, it bothered the hell out of me. I think there was enough tension that it didn't need the jump scares. The other thing, well, shit, I actually forgot the other thing.
What are you, the former governor of Texas?
Apparently.
Yeah, exactly. You and Rick Perry. Mm-hmm. Always forgetting shit.
Oh, the comic relief.
Now you remember.
I remember. The comic relief was perfect. I loved the comic relief. It was the perfect amount. It didn't overdo it.
Especially because it comes from Jordan Peele, from Key and Peele, who had the brilliant sketch comedy show on Comedy Central. If you have not seen that, just look up their sketches on YouTube. They're absolutely brilliant. But this movie was, like, in the works for years. Like, it was one of those things that, like, the script was around, and I don't know. I'm just glad it got made. I thought it was awesome. If I'm going to see a horror movie, let me see a horror movie where I feel like I'm going to at least get some high-minded social issue message.
Yeah.
You know? Then I feel like I'm not wasting my time. If it's just torture porn and, like, let's stab chicks with a knife, that's cliche. I hate that stuff. Like, give me something that has more meat to it. Give me something that will, you know, spark a conversation after seeing the movie.
Yeah, absolutely. Comedic Relief was done by Lil Rel. Howery, who played Rod Williams in the film, he plays a TSA agent.
Oh, he's so good.
Amazing.
He's so good. He's so good in the film. Yeah. Yeah, don't ruin anything, but he's awesome.
I'm not going to say a word.
All right, so Get Out is highly recommended. You gave it an 8 out of 10, which is not a perfect score.
I have yet to give a movie a perfect score. And I doubt I ever
will. Is that like a critic thing of not giving a perfect score?
I think so. I think all movies have their flaws. And I think the flaws should actually be celebrated.
2001 A Space Odyssey, perfect score for me.
Too long.
What do you mean too long?
Too long.
You should see it when you should see it in an altered state. You'd enjoy 2001 better. All right.
I can imagine.
We've got a couple more movies to talk about. Mm-hmm. And then also, we're going to see King Kong.
Yep.
And then we're gonna like leave, and then we're going to talk about King Kong after we see King Kong.
Yep.
But right now, it's time for another edition of DVD Doomsday. Okay, so here we are with another pile of DVDs for me to, you know, it's a buy, rent, or pass situation on these DVDs. And this one is one, okay, I'm already biased because I'm in the movie. It's Doomed, The Untold Story of Roger Corman's The Fantastic Four. It's the documentary about the making of the Fantastic Four movie. I was on the set.
I've wanted to see this for a long time.
Well, you should see this DVD. I was on the set during the making of this film, and it's terrible. I mean, the movie, it's terrible. Here's what's weird. It's terrible, but it's also the best Fantastic Four movie ever made because it's the one that's the most, it's the most true to the original comics.
Yeah.
So, because as we all know, Reed Richards is just an older dude who's into younger blondes. And this movie nails that perfectly. But to be serious for a moment, it's a really good documentary. There's lots of extras on the DVD, of course. If you get the DVDs and I gotta say, like, I love documentaries about unmade movies or movies that were, you know, had trouble.
Yeah.
Troubled production documentaries, I love. Like Alejandro Jodorowsky's Dune. I swear I could create like a whole shelf of just DVDs of movies that, didn't get made or troubled productions, whatever. But I highly recommend this. I'm in it. Roger Corman's in it. They interview the entire cast that was in the movie, the special effects people, and including John Vulich, who recently passed away, who did the special effects and built the Thing costume in the film. The Thing looks better in this movie than any of the Fantastic Four movies.
Yeah, I remember there was a movie called like The Skateboard Kid or something like that, and they had the trailer for the Fantastic Four movie, and I swore to like all of my friends, this movie exists. I cannot find it anywhere.
Oh, dude, we did a thing where we did a signing with the cast of the Fantastic Four at San Diego Comic-Con, which actually led to new rules at San Diego Comic-Con. This is 93.
Mm-hmm.
So summer of 93, the film threat issue with the Fantastic Four is on the cover. We had like 2,000 copies of the issue down at San Diego Comic-Con. The entire cast of the Fantastic Four was there. They were signing at the Film Threat booth, which created a log jam in one of the aisles. So, whatever. I pissed off the people from San Diego Comic-Con way back in the day. But it was great to have the cast. I mean, they ended up changing the rules about how people sign things because of that. I think it's well worth seeing. I don't know that I should give a rating to it, buy, rent, or pass, because I don't think it's fair because I'm in the film and I actually helped with the making of the movie because I gave them like all the files from Film Threat to use for the film. But
I don't think people give a shit. Just
all right, whatever. I recommend it highly. Whether all you buy it or rent it is up to you. But one way or another, you should see the film. How about that? The other thing is I tracked down.
That's a buy. Everybody.
Exactly.
That's a buy.
I'm a huge fan of the I, Claudius BBC series. The I, Claudius BBC series is brilliant, and I just had a hankering to see it, so I looked it up on Amazon and found a copy of I, Claudius on Blu-ray from the Netherlands, but it's multiple region, right? So I was like,
so what does that mean?
Multiple region means you can actually purchase, you can watch it on players that are in different regions of the country. So the U.S. is region one.
Yeah.
So I purchased I, Claudius on Blu-ray, but even though, like, I don't even know how much it really matters because it was shot with cameras from the 70s, you know, like video cameras from the 70s. Derek Jacobi is in it. He's in every Roman production, like Gladiator. He's in Gladiator with Russell Crowe. Derek Jacobi, he's sort of like the... If you're going to have a Brit that is going to play a Roman, you get Derek Jacobi. John Hurt is in it. He plays Nero. Brian Blessed is in it. And Brian Blessed, of course, you know, as Voltan, the Hawk, you know, King of the Hawkmen from Flash Gordon. And it's a limited episode series on the BBC and iClaudius on Blu-ray. There's like nothing on it, but I had to get it from the Netherlands. And here he is, a friend of mine, Charles de Lazarica, is joined. We're doing the Film Threat podcast right now. Oh, we're doing the film.
I couldn't tell from the microphones and all the gear that was here that you're doing a podcast. That's great.
We are doing a podcast. I'm reviewing some DVDs, getting through iClaudius, I found from the Netherlands on Blu-ray. It looks about as good as it could look.
I have not seen it, so I cannot comment.
Well, then there you are then. And then also I saw Doctor Strange. Doctor Strange, looked at all the extras. I have to give Marvel props. Marvel, when they do their DVDs, they actually do it right, except for a couple things. I got to complain about a couple things. When you buy the movie and you get the digital version of the movie, right? You have all the extras also, except for the commentary. Why do they do that?
I don't know why they do it, but commentaries have become less and less popular, especially with big studio discs and their releases, because I don't think they probably think that those are for more like the aficionados, like the Criterion crowd that still really care about, you know, that type of experience. I love them. But it's not mainstream anymore. It's kind of faded away.
To be honest, I haven't listened to a commentary in a long time because I've dealt with so many boring ones. Like, I used to love commentary.
I listen to commentaries like podcasts. I think of them as like a podcast. And the one that's done by the director of Doctor Strange is awesome.
Is it?
Yeah, it's really good because he's mainly a horror director. This guy, his name? Scott Derrickson,
yeah.
Yeah. No, I should point out actually that Charles de Lazarica is a filmmaker, director, also he's produced some of the greatest DVDs that I own in my collection, including Blade Runner, The Final Cut.
Thank you for owning so much of my product. Thank you.
No, I'm just saying, here's what's funny about this. I bought your stuff before I knew you.
Is that right? I feel like it was kind of around the same time, but maybe.
Because I was reviewing DVDs on Attack of the Show that were your DVDs, but I didn't know that you had done them.
I see. That seems to be right. I mean, I would watch Attack of the Show to see DVD Tuesday to see if you would review my discs, and sometimes you did and sometimes you didn't. Right. But you always seemed to like them. You always seemed to. What was it? It was
buy rent or pass.
Yeah. So yeah, I would check in to see what you thought.
But I think it's actually good that I didn't know that you, like the Prometheus DVD, as much as I have issues with the movie, the Prometheus DVD is absolutely incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. Better than the movie?
The Blu-ray is incredible. The DVD is so-so, but the Blu-ray is great, yeah.
The Blu-ray is incredible. But okay, so Doctor Strange, what I don't like about it is, it's interesting though, because Scott Derrickson gets into why they cast, what's her name, is the ancient one, Tilda Swinton. It was like, first they were going to have, they were like, well, to go with an Asian man is just cliche for the ancient one. The ancient one has been different in the comics. So they wanted to mix it up gender-wise, make her a woman. But if they made her like an Asian woman, she would have been more of like a dominatrix / like dragon lady because of all the attributes of the character.
I don't buy that.
Well, I'm just saying that's
lame.
They bounced it off. They were like, if they cast an Asian woman, it would not have... He said it just didn't work, so they went with Tilda Swinton, which I think was an interesting choice because there was a lot of criticism for the film for the whitewashing. But
I mean, I think you put someone like Michelle Yeoh in there, and it's a done deal. I mean, she's beyond the whole dominatrix cliche. I think she's proven herself that she could play like a spiritual warrior of some kind, and I think that she would have been great. But I thought Tilda Swinton was wonderful. I love her and everything she does.
I wouldn't have minded, but what I don't like is I think Disney gets it right because they give you the DVD, the Blu-ray, the digital version. But the digital version has all of the extras except for the commentary. They really kind of blow it for me on that. So I'd say it's a buy because I actually think Doctor Strange, I liked it better than Ant-Man. I thought it holds up to multiple viewings.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's visually gorgeous. It's different than a lot of the other Marvel films. So a buy on that. And that's it for this edition of DVD. Wait. What do you want to say, Charlie?
I just wanted to comment on your comparison between Ant-Man and Doctor Strange, which is I like them both. In fact, I think all pretty much all the Marvel Phase 2 movies are really strong. But what I love about Ant-Man and Doctor Strange is they both have some of the trippiest, like, visual sequences. I mean, when Ant-Man goes down into, like, you know, the nanoverse, whatever it's called, where he goes, like, smaller and smaller and smaller, that was, like, almost Kubrickian in terms of, like the visual splendor, but also, like, how mind-bending it was. And then Doctor Strange was like that for almost an entire movie. So, I mean, on a visual level, to watch those at home, I would just love to watch those over and over again, just to kind of, like, immerse myself in the amount of painstaking work that had to go into those sequences. I mean, especially Doctor Strange, which is, I watched that film half enjoying it, but also half was like, how the hell did they make this movie? Because how do you visualize that level of like this Escher-esque complexity? So anyway, I just wanted to say that I think they're both very, very good movies.
Well, luckily they had extra time because originally Scott Derrickson wanted Benedict Cumberbatch, but there was a scheduling conflict. He couldn't do the movie until, like, you know, they couldn't do the movie on the schedule that they wanted to do it. And so they looked for other actors. I think Johnny Depp was actually one of the people that they talked to, among others. And they kept saying, Benedict Cumberbatch is the best. They actually moved the schedule. They pushed that film so Benedict could actually do the movie. And it's fantastic. There's some really good on the extras. There's a really great thing where they're in New York City. And on the street that they were filming, there was a comic shop. And Benedict Cumberbatch actually goes into the comic book shop. There's, like, footage that was shot with Scott Derrickson's iPhone that he shows. And there's a lot of other cool extras on it. One of the extras on it, they talk about Infinity War, you know, and this sort of buildup. I mean, it's one of those things where I'm getting chills watching. They show 2006, you know, Iron Man, and sort of building up to, like, the Marvel, you know, everything they're doing with Marvel, which is... I don't know. I think Marvel's doing everything right at this point.
Yeah, I didn't mean to steal the mic. I just wanted to piggyback off something that you said. It got robbed at the Oscars. Like, they gave the Oscar
for effects.
Jungle Book. Like,
still, that was great.
Yeah, but it was so creative what they did with Doctor Strange.
I feel like the Academy goes out of their way to not reward certain things that are successful.
I agree.
Yeah. So, and that's this edition of DV Doomsday. Okay, so now we got a couple more movies to talk about, and then we're going to see King Kong, and then after we see King Kong, we will finish up this podcast. But I have not seen these last two movies that we're talking about, so it's all you, Anthony. Like,
it's all on me.
So the Belko experiment. You went to a special screening where James Gunn was there.
I did, and afterwards they had a Q&A. Unfortunately, I did not stay for that. There was a parking issue that I had to take care of. I would have loved to stay for the Q&A. I knew nothing going in.
The Belko experiment's been described as like Hunger Games. No, it's like it's Hunger Games with you're at an office. They basically just tell everybody.
Yeah, that's more accurate. Like, they had an image on the screen, and it said Office Space meets Battle Royale. And
that was on the image on the screen?
That was the image on the screen.
Because that's what they want people to describe it as.
Yeah. I disagree with that wholeheartedly.
You didn't stay for the Q&A. I'm so bummed.
I did not. I wanted to, but, like, I was parking.
You kind of suck right now.
I do. I do. I can't afford to pay a ticket. I came into this movie not watching the trailer, knowing nothing about it. Like, I didn't even know the tagline. I walked in, I saw the, you know, Office Space meets Battle Royale, and I was like, my mind was creating all these scenarios. Like,
here's what I, because I've read your review, that's good. The review that will appear on the filmthreat.com website.
Yeah.
I think a week from today. Mm-hmm. It's lacking a sense of humor, because I would think, especially with James Gunn involved, it would be funny.
Oh my gosh.
It's not funny?
Mm-hmm. I thought, you know, like, people were going to be smashing each other's heads in the scanner and, like, paper was going to fly out with, you know, I thought people were going to be stapling each other's heads. Like, no, it's played very seriously. And it's all a question about ethics and survival. You know, how far are you willing to go to ensure your own
survival? So it's like working at a company.
Yeah. Sure. Why not? I mean, they asked us to do like 3-word reviews online, and mine was unexpected and intense or something like that. I think that's what my 3-word on three-word.
So they asked you at the screening to tweet out a review with 3 words.
Yeah, 3-word review. and mine was like unexpected and interesting or something like that. Because it was unexpected, I was expecting something a little more humorous, seeing Slither, seeing Super, you know, knowing James Gunn as a filmmaker and knowing his, you know, work on Guardians of the Galaxy, like he does have...
Great does Guardians of the Galaxy look?
Oh,
oh my God, that most recent trailer looks so good.
Mm-hmm.
And we keep hearing these rumors that in test screenings it's getting 100%.
Yeah.
What do you know, Charles de Lazarica?
No, I've heard the same thing. I got it through the roof test screen scores, and that it's so much so that I feel like James Gunn and some of the people who worked on it were downplaying it so people's expectations weren't too high. But no, it looks phenomenal. I can't wait to see it. I mean, the first one was a lot of fun, and I'm sure this one looks to be even funner.
We'll probably have another Arclight gathering for Guardians of the Galaxy 2.
Looking forward to it.
So Belko Experiment.
It's just that it starts out and we get a very brief introduction to the characters, and I wish, like, because of what happens to them later on in the movie, I wish we would have got to know more about them. We would have gotten to know more about their relationship with each other. It would have had more impact.
Let's talk about this next movie, because we got to actually get in and see King Kong shortly. This is a movie that actually opens at the South by Southwest Film Festival this weekend.
Yes.
Okay, because we're getting screeners for South by Southwest. We're not going to South by Southwest this year because it's a fucking clusterfuck. I feel like South by Southwest has gotten, it's sort of like Sundance. It's a victim of its own success, where it's gotten so big the people that used to go, like myself, don't go anymore because it's impossible to go. It's incredibly expensive, and now it's like this huge, huge event. So tell me about Game of Death.
It actually has a very...
Which has nothing to do with the Bruce Lee movie Game of Death, right?
Yeah.
From the 70s?
It actually has a kind of a similar premise to the Belko Experiment, but it's far more gonzo. It's kind of like what I expected the Belko Experiment to be.
All right.
The premise is these teenagers are kind of partying at this this vacation house, and they find this 80s board game. And the way they play is, like, they put their fingers on it, and it takes their blood. And it basically says, you know, like, the rule of the game is you have a certain amount of time to kill somebody. If you don't, like, your head basically explodes. And the effects are really super cheesy and cool. And it's like a straight, like, comedy horror movie.
I feel like you have to temper it with comedy, because
yeah.
If you do the premise of Belko Experiment, if you do that totally straight up, like, serious, is just dark.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like you have to temper with a sense of humor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's, you know, like, they have to kill, like, 24 people, and there's these, like, animated scenes that kind of break up the movie where, like, they go from 2D animation to, like, 8-bit to, like, 3D, and it's just a very stylish movie. And
let's make sure when we post the review to put a trailer in.
Oh, yeah,
the trailer to it so people can see it. But
yeah.
That's great. And the review will run this weekend.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, cool.
I'll definitely get it.
It's opening at South By, and what's your rating?
I'm probably going to give it a 9 out of 10, just because.
Wow, more than Get Out.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's impressive.
I
like the sound of that.
I think it's so
neat. And here he is, Cliff Stevenson, another of the great producers of the DVDs. How are you, Cliff?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing well. We're recording a podcast. So we're ready to see King Kong. We got to go.
I know. I'm excited.
No, I'm excited too. This is gonna be a lot of fun. Cool. All right, so we're gonna run in to see King Kong. We will we'll restart the recorder and we will give you our thoughts. Charles, will you join us after?
Of course. If there's booze involved, I'll always join.
Yes. Okay. So there'll be booze involved. We'll be talking about King Kong after we see the screening here at the ArcLight Cinemas on Sunset Boulevard in gorgeous Hollywood at the Cinerama Dome. Awesome. Cool. So just. Hang on and stay tuned. Wait, you don't have to stay tuned. Just keep playing. Okay, so Kong Skull Island. We just got out of the screening. And shockingly, we all have grins on our faces. Wait, let me introduce who's here. We have...
Anthony Bench.
Cliff Stevenson.
Charlie de Lazarica.
And we just got out of the screening of Kong Skull Island with grins on our faces because, first of all, giant monster movies where lots of people die... They're just fun. It's like, look, this was dumb fun. This movie's not going to change my life.
I thought it was fun. I didn't think it was dumb. I thought it actually was, some of the visuals I thought were stunning. I thought there was some really great concepts. It's like I was telling Cliff earlier, it was almost like the whole movie was a series of teaser posters.
Right.
You know, I mean, like every shot, every scene had an iconic visual in it that I thought was really clever or fun or stunning or whatever. It served the movie.
And one thing I loved is that it was set in 1973.
That's fantastic. Yeah, I love that.
Which was a great idea because it's just like all the analog stuff. Like when someone grabbed a rotary phone with a cord on it, it was just, first of all, funny, but also like it actually made it easier, I think, for the writers, because today I feel like writers are challenged with, we have all this technology at our fingertips, which makes everything easier. It presents new challenges when you're when you have this old school technology.
I'm just glad it wasn't a retread and it wasn't set in the 30s. Like I'm sick of that.
Well, I mean, obviously, this is the first in the kind of monster verse that they're launching. Well, because I mean, there's been word that they're, you know, that Godzilla essentially kind of started this, and this is the next movie after Godzilla. But this is really the anti-Godzilla, because Godzilla got bogged down in never showing Godzilla, and every time you kind of got close to some action, either the TV changed or the door closed or something.
You were constantly
being teased. This is like you get Kong, and you get Kong through the movie. There's a lot of monkey business, and you're not denied
full
any
frontal
of it at
Kong.
All.
Full like frontal Kong.
Right. They know what the movie's called, and they deliver on the title.
And what I loved was, first of all, I love giant monster movies. Just in general, as a rule, I love, because as a kid watching them, I was always like, if there could just be a giant monster, I could get out of going to school. There was Monster Week. Monster Week was a thing. Did you guys have Monster Week when you were younger?
No.
Monster Week was like where they showed all the monster movies in one week. That's why I quit the Cub Scouts. I quit Cub Scouts because Monster Week conflicted with my viewing of movies on television. But they cut right to, first of all, they don't shy away from showing Kong, right? They just, balls out like there's Kong. And not only that, lots of people die.
And lots of monsters die, and there's just a lot of chaos and mayhem, and you know what I like about this film is that it actually has a theme. It's not just fighting. It's basically humanity creates its own problems, and that begins with the very beginning of Washington D.C. and that wonderful first line of the film, which I may not want to say. Let's see if save for people, but basically the first line of the movie that John Goodman says is a direct commentary on Trump and the problem we're in right now, you know, and that was wonderful because that sets up like. From Washington bureaucracy all the way down to the micromanagement of military missions and all that you know, red tape bullshit that kind of plays into the situation that begins the film, and therefore we see how humans, dumb humans, fallible humans, just like can cause their own problems, and sometimes on a spectacular scale like this. And I thought that was a really good way to start the movie.
I agree.
Well, and I think this may be considered spoilerish, but I don't think it really is. But one of the things I like is the way that they set up Kong not as the villain. He's really not the antagonist. Like they established very early on that he's not a bad guy.
Yeah.
And so it doesn't end up being this thing where you're constantly viewing him through this prism that then they suddenly reveal it's different later. Like they reveal fairly early on that he's kind of the god of this island. He's the savior of this island. He's a protector of this island. And that kind of makes all the difference in where you line up your allegiances via the different characters.
What about the effects? I thought the effects were... I thought they were better than Godzilla. The Gareth Edwards Godzilla.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to reiterate what Charlie said, but this... Nearly every shot in this movie is... looks like a piece of art. Looks like something that you would print out and hang on your wall. The composition, the color, it really is that kind of Apocalypse Now. Like there is a reason that all of the posters that have been created for this movie have this Apocalypse Now vibe to them.
The red and the orange.
The red sunset, and the orange, yeah. And the helicopters and the sunsets and the silhouetting. It's very deliberate. And so you watch this movie, and I was constantly blown away by just how gorgeous everything is, and that you just want to sit and watch every, like, even a shot of three soldiers standing in the background, the way that they're positioned, the way that they're holding their guns, the way that it's framed, you eat up every single frame of this film because it's so good looking.
Yeah, and I mean the creature design was excellent. Like, we didn't just get the dinosaurs. Like, they didn't just look like T-Rexes. They didn't just look like, you know, pteranodons or you know, triceratopses. We got, like, things that looked like the stick bugs and the spider creature. It was amazing.
And they all had characters. That's the mm-hmm. thing, is, like, every single creature, insect or otherwise, all had a personality of some kind. And that takes us, by the way, to the humans in the movie. I just have to say right off the bat, great cast, but the MVP, without doubt, John C. Reilly, absolutely steals the movie.
John C. Reilly is so good. And he comes about midway in the film. His character is introduced. And, yeah, no, he steals the film.
And it's a character that could go really wrong. Because he's kind of the comic relief, and he's
like the Dennis Hopper character.
Over the top, right.
But in Apocalypse Now.
The way that he's set up and the reason that he's there on the island, it's like it all kind of makes sense, and his dialogue is so good. And I think if you take him out of this movie, you cut a big part of what makes this movie so good.
And right we also have to say, one of the longest end credit sequences, that the end credits, but you need to stay to the end.
Yeah, you definitely have to stay for the end.
You have to stay to the end.
Yeah.
And I don't even know if we don't want to say, but it's a Marvel-like ending.
But I'll tell you this, based on all the, like, the post-credits, like, tags we've seen in the last several years, this is probably one of the most successful, because the audience was, like, cheering and yelling and, like, so thrilled by the way this post-credits tag ends. So definitely stay for the end credits. Like, that
yeah,
was
just
great.
Like, yeah, the eight-year-old, the eight-year-old version of me was just freaking out at the ending, the end credit sequence.
It was reminiscent of the way, of the reaction that you got on the first Iron Man, where Nick Fury comes out and starts talking about the Avengers Initiative. And it was that, where it was like, if you knew what you knew, you were very excited about that. And the people that were watching tonight, they knew what mm-hmm. was going on. And it was, it's very much like that first Iron Man post-credit sequence, but definitely stay. Don't go to the bathroom, and try and get into the movie before it starts. Don't get in the slowest popcorn line.
Okay, can we talk about, like, the ArcLight cinemas? Like, this the
Miss
worst.
Miss Daisy, the old woman helping us with our popcorn.
Oh my God, it was the worst. We were in the worst popcorn line ever. We missed all the trailers.
Yeah, we missed all the trailers. We were probably one of the first people in the line, you know, if you sort
we
of took
the
a
last
snapshot of the line, and we were the last to leave.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, there were people that came into the theater after us, like, with their tickets, into line, and had their food and left before we were done.
Yeah, well, we learned our lesson.
Yeah.
So going back to the, you know, you brought up the Iron Man post-credit scene.
Right.
What did you guys think of Samuel L. Jackson and his character?
It was very Sam Jackson. I mean, I don't think there's.
He's pretty much the same awesome Sam Jackson as he is in everything he's in.
He's a great character, but I don't know that there's a lot of elasticity.
I feel like the worst thing Sam Jackson has ever done has been the Star Wars prequels. To be honest, I mean, like, let's be honest. Like, when you see Sam Jackson, it's like the movie could be terrible. He's awesome, except for the prequels.
Yeah, he was really solid in this. I think everyone was either at least solid or great. Like, there wasn't really anyone bad in the film, and Sam Jackson was definitely solid. And he had a part that he had to play, and he played it as well as he could.
Yeah.
Same with Tom Hiddleston. Same with Brie Larson. They had parts they had to play to make this all work, because ultimately the stars are Kong and the monsters, and to lesser degrees, maybe someone like John C. Reilly, or some of the comedic byplay between the characters. Because there was a lot of fun stuff in this film. It wasn't just like crazy monster action and violence. There was a lot of big laughs in this film.
I just really liked his motivation, how he was like this soldier that couldn't let go of the war. Like, it takes place after Vietnam, and he's this like character that just couldn't really handle losing. And I really, really liked that aspect.
Well, and there's validation to his actions in the film. Like you could
right.
Without getting into kind of what his motivations are, they make sense. Mm-hmm. Like his behavior throughout the film makes sense, and so you can't sort of fault him in any way for the decisions he makes.
And I do love Loki in human form. When basically
in a tight t-shirt. And
it's the whole movie in a really tight t-shirt.
It's like between his tight t-shirt and Brie Larson's tight t-shirt.
Yeah.
It's like there's a little something for everybody. Brie Larson, not a ton of stuff for her to do, but she's really good. And I think her being likable carries a lot of weight, and she does have a lot of, you know, she does have a reason to be there. It's not just this random woman that they've thrown in, but she is also, I guess she's not the only woman. There's the other, the scientist woman, but she's essentially the female energy in this, and, you know, coming off of an Oscar to make Kong your next film is, that's pretty impressive.
I'm just happy it's not like any other Kong movie we've seen before. Like, they could have gone the whole route where, you know, Kong is infatuated with her and, you know, they redo the scene that we've seen a million times before.
There could have been a Jessica Lange cameo. I'm glad they didn't do that.
I am too.
Another scene under the waterfall with Kong basically pulling her clothes off.
Yeah, or really creepily like sniffing her sniffing his finger.
But I was saying, in a way, you could tie those two films together. You could tie Skull Island and the 76 Kong together in the same continuity. There's nothing that necessarily says that they're not connected. Like that, I found kind of interesting.
I don't really like thinking about the 76 Kong.
I love the 76.
The 76 Kong is the first Kong I ever saw because I was like the age I was at, and I loved it. I mean, I look back at it now, and yeah, it's a little shaky, but I mean, the score is phenomenal. The Rick Baker work is phenomenal. Carlo Rambaldi work is phenomenal. It's a really great film for that particular time, and if you're that particular age, I think 76 holds up. In that little time capsule, it's now long gone. This, to me, is like probably my favorite Kong in a long, long time. I mean, again, the 33 is a classic. It's, you know, iconic. The Peter Jackson film has its own great stuff. I love the Empire State Building battle in Jackson's movie.
Yes.
But like, this one, to me, is the most kind of like wholly satisfying across the board Kong I've seen in quite some time.
Yeah.
No, but you're right. I mean, the fact that it's not just a retread of King Kong, that it is its own mythology, I think works in its favor because, you know, Jackson's film gets a little bogged down in being reverential to
very
the 33
so.
Version, whereas this is allowed to sort of just have its own identity, be its own thing. And I think that, yeah, if they were just remaking that movie, I don't think it's successful in the way that it is.
I really thought that there was going to be a lot of scenes that were going to reference the 33 film, like Kong was going to climb something tall or, you know, and I'm glad that it kind of had its own vibe. I'm really glad that it had its own vibe.
I mean, I think it taps into an interesting formula that we haven't seen enough of, which is to take a premise or a concept or an existing IP from another time, and rather than bring it to the modern age, to today, it takes it to an established, very signature time, like in this case, the post-Vietnam War, like, you know, early 70s. That was great. It'd be like if you take, a zombie movie and take it to Desert Storm in Iraq or something like that. It's like to take these genre tropes, these genre storylines, but then plant them into some other timeline that's not our present. I love seeing this mixing and matching. Like there was a time they were talking about making a Predator film in the Old West. Like that would have been great. I would have loved to have seen that, you know? So it's like things like that, the mixing and matching, this one did very well. I was really happy about that. And even we talked about the political references, but like the little Nixon bobblehead on the helicopter. I mean, like all these great little 70s references throughout the music, the sunglasses and seeing the reflections of the napalm in their glasses. It was very like Apocalypse Now by way of modern filmmaking, I thought.
So I think across the board, recommended to see. Like, I mean, like, you know, I would give it a better review than Get Out at this point. we talked about earlier.
Yeah, that's absurd.
Exactly.
To compare the two.
You can't compare. But in terms of like I liked it way better. The Peter Jackson Kong, I thought I hated it because you can't top that. Like the original, you know, King Kong from the 30s. That was a product of its time. Him trying to reproduce that today made no sense. Like, I hate that Peter Jackson Kong. I'm sorry. It just, like, the digital effects, like, everything, it just looked shit.
See, I won't say it's better than Get Out, but I will say I think I liked it more than Logan. And I think if you ask me what thing I would rather see again, I would rather see Kong again than see Logan again.
I agree. I would rather see Kong again than Logan, but I don't think Logan is a lesser film. I actually think Logan is, it's a brutal, you know, very trying film that challenges you emotionally, challenges your sense of, you know, life in a way that no comic book movie has really tried to attempt on that level. To compare that to like the straight up awesome popcorn movie that is Kong is ridiculous. We're living in a really good like stretch of films recently. Like this has been a really good year so far, and I see no reason to compare one against another and say one's better than the other. We're enjoying some really good movies. I was pleasantly shocked by Kong tonight. You know, based on the trailers and based on it being yet another Kong movie, I thought, oh, it's another studio cash grab. And there was a lot of heart and work put into this film. I mean, there was you said it earlier. It's like they brought their A game to this film. And you can say, yeah, it's a silly whatever popcorn adventure film, but it was fun. It was smart. It was visually stunning. I mean, it's what kind of like these types of movies are made for, and it hits its mark. I'll just say that
it had great moments. Like more than anything, there are great moments that, I mean, this is the thing, we're kind of holding back because we don't want to give away spoilers, but there are great moments from the opening line, you know, in the film in Washington D.C., which you didn't say, which I thought was great. Like, there are really great moments.
Yeah. No, I mean, again, Charlie's right. It's hard to say that this film is a better film than that film. They're two different things. But I will also agree with him in that I've seen 5 films in the last 7 days, and they were all awesome. Like, there wasn't a clunker in the bunch, starting with Logan last week and now ending with Kong. Everything I've seen is great. And most of them, all right, not most of them, nearly half of them were original.
And you're going to take your son to see it?
Yes, I'm taking my 7-year-old on Sunday to see it. He's going to flip.
Okay, 7-year-old seeing this movie will be blown away.
I was telling Cliff, because I was 7 when I saw Jaws.
Oh,
now,
wow.
Jaws was, you know, it's a PG movie, but it's an R movie. It's really an R movie. And there's some stuff in this film that's a bit rough for kids, but it's presented in such a way that I think it's good for kids to see. You have to start, like, preparing them for the horrors of life, you know, and this film has a couple, you know, strong moments, but I think it's perfect for your kid. I mean, I can't wait for him to see it because it's going to be really great, especially for you to see his reaction.
He's going to be thinking about it for a long time.
Well, it's, you know, you think back to when we were kids and we had our Star Wars moment or our Jaws moment or our Indiana Jones moment where, you know, these things where they left an impression, they left an imprint that kind of, I mean, that's why I love movies today. I saw Empire Strikes Back at the Avco 70mm, like right after it opened, and that's stayed with me to this very minute, and it's why I do what I do, it's why I love what I love. And so, you know, I'm as the father of a 7-year-old, I'm constantly wondering, like, what's that thing for him? Is it Guardians of the Galaxy? Is it, you know, will it be Kong? Will it be, like, what's the thing that will stay with him and affect him in a way that Empire Strikes Back affected me?
Can I just say this is the best Kong movie since The Empire Strikes Back? It's the, you know what it is? It's The Empire Strikes Back.
Well, no,
of Kong
wait,
movies.
Are you discounting King Kong Lives?
No, I'm saying that like everybody uses Empire Strikes Back as a barometer to
it's a great movie.
It's actually my favorite movie of all time.
That's
exactly
why.
But I think Empire Strikes Back was such a product of that Star Wars was this perfect, happy, you know, like you're on a Star Wars high. When you first saw Star Wars, the first Star Wars, not the special edition. You first saw Star Wars, right? And then you saw Empire Strikes Back. It wouldn't have been, you know, meaningful without that first movie. So everyone uses Empire as a barometer for, we're going to make the Empire Strikes Back of X.
Well,
right? That's a thing.
But here's the thing.
It's the Empire Strikes Back of Kong movies is
partially because I think it's a great movie and it's my favorite movie of all time. But it also has a lot to do with how and where I saw it. So seeing it, because I saw it at the Avco, which was, and Charlie can probably, the Avco in Westwood. Which is now an iPick, and it's been torn down and rebuilt or whatever. But it was, I mean, the experience of it, where it was like we waited in line around the block. I bought a program. It was sold out, and, you know, the lights went down, and people went crazy and cheered and hollered. And it was as much the movie as it was the experience of the movie. And that's the thing. And listen, that's why, whenever we all get together and go to the movies, it's why I'm always getting tickets for the Cinerama Dome or the Chinese or the Village, or because the experience of that is part of what makes that movie for me.
This was my first time at the Cinerama Dome.
What?
Yeah. Never been here before.
Oh, this is like an iconic theater. But first, I want to thank you guys for being on the show.
Thanks for having us.
Where can we find you on social media? Go ahead and throw out a plug for yourself.
I'm on Twitter at Lazarica, LAUZIRIKA, and then Facebook and Instagram. And I'm off Tinder though because I'm engaged now.
You're still on Grindr.
No, that's your job.
I am on Twitter. I'm on Twitter twice actually. So I'm at the name's Cliff, and I also tweet out of an account at Old Movie Ads, where I basically...
I've retweeted you.
If you love movies and you love old movie ads, then you will probably enjoy this because I've been having fun.
It's great because I think I retweeted you when you posted something about Conquest of the Planet of the Apes.
Oh, yeah. I think it was a triple feature.
Yes, like a triple feature.
74 triple feature of like apes movies.
Anthony, what about you?
I'm on Twitter at This Game Cheats.
All right, that Chris Gore and everything and Film Threat. I want to thank you guys for being on the show. We always end
Chris,
the show by...
Where can we find you?
Who cares? Okay, so... But you'll find me at the Arclight, at the bar. At the bar at the Arclight, that's where you'll find me. I don't want to say this is the way we end every episode of the show, which is the most common line spoken in... It's the most commonly scripted line of dialogue in films. We end every episode of the Film Threat podcast by saying... Let's get out of here!